And Mr. City Attorney, do we have anything to report?
There was no reportable action.
Thank you. I'll call the regular session to order. And first, we are going to begin with a Pledge of Allegiance. And in honor of the 75th anniversary of Little League tonight, I've asked Joseph Dawson, an Atascadero resident in second grade and a Little Leaguer, to come up tonight, and he's going to lead us in the flag salute. So, Joseph, if you'd come right on up over here. Very good. Please stand, and Joseph will lead us. Thank you. We get to begin the evening with a presentation of the first is the 75th anniversary of Little League. We have a proclamation. Of course, this isn't near as fun to do as getting to throw out the first pitch this last year. Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant joined me, and it was a great time had by all. And I believe, Tim, you're here. If you would like to come up and be ready at the lectern and have folks join you up there, I'm going to ask Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant, who had joined me, if you would read the proclamation.
I'd love to. This proclamation is saying that 2014 is the 75th anniversary year of Little League. So whereas founded in 1939, Little League is the largest youth sports organization in the world, with 2.4 million children playing in more than 80 countries. And whereas Little League gives the children of the world a game that provides fundamental principles, sportsmanship, fair play, and teamwork, they can use later in life to become good citizens. And whereas Little League has always been a community-based organization focused on developing future leaders and citizens through the sports of baseball and softball, and whereas with division of play for boys and girls from ages 4 to 18, there's an opportunity for all children to have a Little League experience, and whereas there are 7,000 local Little League programs in over 80 countries where children, parents, and volunteers come together to support their teams, and whereas Little League is the leader in competitive youth sports and organizes 9 World Series tournaments, all Little League championship games are broadcast on ESPN, cable television sports networks globally, and whereas Little League baseball and softball is a cherished tradition in our community, in our country, and around the world, providing millions of young people the opportunity to play, learn, grow, and develop lifelong relationships. Now, therefore, be it resolved.
I'm going to hold you on that thought. I got so excited about this baseball event, we have to do an approval of the agenda before we actually officially declare the proclamation. So I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I move approval of the agenda.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Fonzie, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
We can continue the agenda and issue the proclamation.
Well, actually, that just adds right into the moment, because now, therefore, be it resolved that the City of Atascadero does hereby proclaim 2014 as the 75th anniversary year of the founding of Little League Youth Sports and recognizes the history and value of Little League programs in our community.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Tim Bokum, and I'm a board member with the Atascadero Little League. Tonight with me is Kip Meredith, a fellow board member, and Paul Waite, as well as some of our players and parents. And I first want to thank you on behalf of over 280 players and 26 managers, coaches, and teams in recognizing Little League this year. We are one of the major youth organizations of Atascadero, and quite simply, we couldn't survive without the city. I do want to recognize two departments that you run, the Public Works Department and the Park and Recs Department, that are integral to what we do on a weekly basis out there for our seasons. And I particularly want to thank Paula Anton for the...
And I want to take this moment to acknowledge some of my old coaches, Mr. Alvord. Many of you play at Alvord Field. And, of course, growing up when I was your age, there were a lot of adults in the community came together, much like our current coaches, and said there weren't enough ball fields in town, so they built one. And so much volunteer spirit in our community has brought many things together. So if we need some more fields, I know the community will come together and help with that. If you would join us in the front with your players, we'll join you for a picture.
Absolutely, and I'd be remiss to say we brought swag for you, hats and some other stuff, so you can have that as we do it. Thank you.
pitch tar
yeah,
back here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the pitch tar.
When I was in Little League, you know who my coach was?
Is Mike here?
Bob goes on vacation and I forget everything. What? How? Maybe I need a vacation. We have three more items that are under presentations that are going to be reports on some other very great things in our community. Next, we're glad to hear from
summer program. Our program is based on three things. One is education, which is the cornerstone of Boys and Girls Club. The second thing is recreation, and the third thing is character development. And we'll be touching on all those areas this summer with the children who participate in our program. The program will run from June 16th through August 15th, so it runs all summer. And it's going to be an all-day program, which is ideal for working parents who need an alternative for a place for their kids to be that are safe and educational and fun. And we open at 7:30 in the morning, and we go right through till 6 o'clock at night, which fits very nicely with parents' working schedule. In addition to that, we provide the children who come to our program breakfast, lunch, and a snack each day. And the program is kept at a very low cost of about $1.10 an hour for the summer, which is a very reasonable fee. We just charge a fee to actually pay for the staff that works for us during the summer. We're just covering our costs. But beyond that, it's a community program that's meant to be affordable for families, for working families here in our community. As an Atascadero resident, I'm very proud to be able to bring this program to this community. The piece of the program that is even more exciting is that next summer we plan on expanding this program to 120 children. And we have had some generous folks in the community step up and provide limited scholarship funds for those families who can't afford the low fee that we're charging. We do have some way of helping a few of those families this year as well. We hope to be able to expand that next year as well. The program is almost completely full at this point. We just have a couple slots open. We've gotten the word out to the community, and there's been a tremendous response. Unfortunately, we don't have much room for more children that haven't signed up already this summer. But the good news is that if people get on our waiting list, they'll be the first people that we let know when the slots open for next summer, when we expand the program to 120 children. So I would encourage people to reach out to the Boys and Girls Club. You can find us on the internet easily at bgcpaso.org. And there's a link there to our application and our phone number. So I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to share with you tonight. I'm really excited about bringing this program to Atascadero. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Next on our agenda is to hear from the Atascadero State Hospital, who will be celebrating their 60th anniversary this year. And we have a presentation by Martha Stabe, is it? Welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and City Council members and city staff. My name is Martha Stabe, and I'm the Acting Public Information Officer for Atascadero State Hospital. I've been asked to share some good news with you regarding our upcoming anniversary. But before we do, let's take... Where can I point this? There we go. All right. The dedication ceremony at Atascadero State Hospital took place on Sunday, June 20th, 1954, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Despite a record heat of 106 degrees that day, we had 6,000 people from Atascadero crowded into the hospital's gymnasium for a dedication ceremony and an open tour of the hospital. It was a day very few people in Atascadero would forget. Jumping ahead, this year our hospital will be celebrating 60 years of providing mental health care to men from all over the state. We will also be celebrating 60 years of our partnership with the community of Atascadero. To this end, I would like to invite the Atascadero City Council, along with the Chamber of Commerce, to be our honored guests at our rededication ceremony, scheduled for Thursday, June 19th, at 10:30 in the morning, followed by a staff appreciation barbecue on our front lawn. We'd like to thank you for all you've done to support the recovery of our patients through the local volunteer efforts, as well as support for our staff through recruitment and through affordable housing efforts. We look forward to continuing our partnership of public service and the sharing of future landmark celebrations with you. Thank you.
Thank you. And before you step down, and I should have given Councilman Kelly a little warning, but there's a lot of impact having you in our community. And I know Bob Kelly sits on the advisory board, which is appointment by the governor. Would you like to share a word or two about the importance they are in our community?
Yes, I think I've been on the city council now for 6 years, and probably about 5 years ago, somebody said, does anybody want to go down to the state hospital and be on the board? And being the new guy on the board, yeah, I'll go down there because I've lived in town now for about 39 years. And probably for 33 years, I drove by wondering what's back there behind that big sign. So I found it very, very interesting to go back there. And just recently, Gregor Jones from the Chamber of Commerce is also on the board. We started talking some numbers down there, and I realized what a tremendous impact, financial impact, the hospital has on our community. They have a budget over $220 million. There's over 2,000 employees, and I believe 90% of them live in Atascadero, and usually 70% of the budget goes towards payroll. So you can see how much money comes back into our city. And during one of the meetings, we brought up that they were going to have the 60th anniversary, and they have a whole list of different things that are going to be going on in the community. And I'm sure you have a web page somewhere where the people can go and look at that. But it's really, really interesting what an impact that hospital is to our community and the great job that they really do down there for the mentally ill people. So I was very glad that you allowed Mrs. Stabe to come here and put her presentation on tonight. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. And I too, have retired after nearly 30 years working at county mental health. And so,
although here in Atascadero, we're got 300 to 400 homes that are under construction or are going to be constructed. So we're going to try to put a program together, somewhat of a recruiting program, where they can send off to people who are interested in coming to the area, that we do have everything from affordable housing up to anything beyond what we can afford. So, and hopefully that will expand throughout the county, because I also sit on the EVC board, and they have the same problems with the high-tech companies down south. So I think this will be a benefit for everybody, the hospital, the community, and actually the whole county. So we look forward to working together.
Very good. Thank you once again.
Thank you.
And our next presentation will be by the San Luis Council of Governments regarding the U.S. 101 corridor and some improvements coming our way. And Ms. Jessica Berry, welcome.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley, members of the council. I will be very brief because I was just here in February to give you an update. So I'm going to give you another brief update and let you know about our final workshop that we're having. So as Mayor O'Malley mentioned, my name is Jessica Berry, and I'm with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. For those of you who don't know, we are a regional transportation planning and funding agency, and our board is made up of all of the supervisors as well as a representative from each of the incorporated cities. So Mayor O'Malley is on our board. This 101 master plan is a project we've been working on for a few years. About a year and a half ago, we applied for and received a grant, partnership planning grant, to do this study. So we work very closely with Caltrans and the local, thank you, and our local agencies that are affected by the 101 corridor. So we've been having ongoing meetings with all of our partners, and I've presented here. This is my second time, and before that, someone else came and presented to you about this study, and we're just giving you another update about where we are. So, moving along, these were the tasks that we set out to do, and to the right of the task is what we've done so far. So we did develop our performance measures that we used to evaluate the corridor, and I brought to you, I showed you the cartogram the last time I was here, and we'll look at that again real quickly. Last summer, we did our first round of public outreach, and we did not have a lot of representation at our first workshop, so we held some additional workshops and did an online web tool where we received a lot of comments, which was very useful. In October of last year, our board approved the areas that we decided to focus on for the study. We've been calling them the focus study segments, and Atascadero is within one of those focus study segments. We did a round of outreach that was hosted here, and we thank you very much for that. It was a well-attended workshop. During that outreach phase, we also had another web tool. Right now, our consultants are working on a benefit cost analysis, so they're figuring out what improvement concepts are good and how well they work when we test them on the corridor. At our June board meeting, our June SLOCOG board meeting, we'll be discussing those some more, developing that criteria for deciding which projects should be the highest priority, and will end up in our regional transportation plan. So our final workshop we will be having on May 31st, and that will be at the Ludwig Center in San Luis Obispo. We're just doing one workshop, so I'm making an effort to go to the final for this study will go in October, and the RTP, the Regional Transportation Plan, will continue past that. So the outreach for the Regional Transportation Plan will happen toward the end of summer and into the fall. So as I mentioned, this is the cartogram. This was how we developed 12 performance metrics to evaluate the corridor and choose those focus areas. It's a little hard to read, but what you can see in that that orange swath there, where it says Atascadero above it, basically this focus study segment is between Santa Barbara Road and Vineyard Drive, along the corridor, which would include not just the main line, but parallel routes. And then here's a slightly more up-close picture of it. If you came to the workshop, you saw this map. This is what we presented at the workshop. So there's approximately 13 project areas that we're looking at and 44 variations of projects in those areas that we're testing to see what would work best performance-wise. And I've lost my screen, but I can still finish without it. The last slide, actually, that you're not seeing here. There we go. That's the important one. This is the one that tells you when and where to come give us more input. Saturday, May 31st from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Ludwig Center in San Luis Obispo. That's when our final workshop is happening. I would also like to point out in the lower right-hand corner there, slowcogconnectingcommunities.com. It's the website where you can find all of the information that we've, all of the pieces of information we've created so far, we've been putting up there, and the information about this workshop will be there as well. And then, as I mentioned, our SLOCOG board meeting on June 4th, we'll be presenting basically what I've shown you here, but more information, including the data we're starting to see from that benefit-cost analysis. And then, the draft plan will go to the SLOCOG board in August. And that is when the RTP, the Regional Transportation Plan outreach, will begin. So that's all I have for you tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Berry. Any questions from council members while we have the expert here with us? See, yes.
I'm assuming we can see this master plan online?
Yes, right now it's there are sections of it. So we have a page, it's called the library, and it has each of the memos that will be the chapters. It's all on the website, so you can download any of it and look at it. And the posters, what you saw, and what we had here for the workshop are all online as well. And then, of course, the final document will definitely be online.
So is it possible for the public to weigh in on any of these improvements if they go to the website?
We don't have the interactive tool on the website anymore, but people can still provide their comments directly to me. There's an email address on that website. So that's always an opportunity. And then when we do the regional transportation plan outreach, it will have an interactive web tool like we did earlier in the process for this study.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thanks. And as Ms. Berry said, we have our five county supervisors and one representative from each city, usually the mayor from each city, is the San Luis Council of Governments board. And we do interact primarily with Caltrans and is the body that reviews most state and federal funds related to transportation entities for public input and trying to work hard and even coming to us here. So we appreciate all of the staff's work on this. So thank you. Well, next on the agenda is the consent calendar. We have quite a few items, 10 as a matter of fact. Most have been things that have been reviewed before and are considered fairly routine. But if there's any council member or a member of the public wishing to pull an item for further discussion, we will do that. Otherwise, we'll go ahead with remaining. And you had, sir, you had an item you wished to pull? Number four. Any other member of the public or council wanting to pull an item? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion on items 1 through 3 and 5 through 10.
So moved.
Second.
And Mayor O'Malley.
Yes, I will all respond on that. We have a motion by Councilwoman Moreno and a seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant. I will be voting on all items except number 10 as I am involved in the business that is involved with transient occupancy tax, so I will exclude myself from that particular vote. I'll go ahead with a roll call by the city clerk.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Excuse me. Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Very good. Thank you. We'll now take up consent calendar item number 4. And could I just get a very brief overview of what is entailed in this particular item from our city engineer, and then we'll bring it to council and the public. Just as Warren, are you going to take
this? I'll respond to that.
Thank you.
That is the second reading of the ordinance that contains the changes to the plan development number 11 text that was reviewed by the city council 2 weeks ago, introduced for first reading. So basically that will change the off-site road improvement requirements for the Oak Ridge Estates project at the intersection of Los Altos Road and Highway 41, as well as another driveway further to the west on Highway 41.
Okay, thank you. And I'll now open that item up to the public for any member of the public to comment on this item. Welcome.
Good evening again. My name is Mitch Paskin. I'm a resident of Atascadero up in 3F Meadows area. And we've talked about this before. And these changes that are going to be voted on tonight are not consistent with the general plan as it exists today. And the facts don't support what's happening here, right? And you have no authority, as far as I can tell, to change any kind of mitigating measures without changing the project concomitantly. The EIR is old. It doesn't apply to the intersection or the roads as they exist today. And the EIR is dated 1994. It's 20 years ago. It's a different world. So I'm asking the City Council to vote no on this item tonight. Restart the process not only with the SR-41 and the Los Altos Road intersection, but the off-site roads elements in general for the safety of Altos Road into being a collector, which is a 26-foot road, which Los Altos is not, with 4-foot shoulders are typical, with a capacity of 10,500 daily trips a day. And that was done after Mr. Shetler bought the Oak Ridge Estates project, or then it was 3F Meadows Ranch. According to Mr. Weinberg's figures from WTrans, who turned in a traffic report, there's going to be upwards to 1,700 ADTs on Los Altos Road. And Senegal Road down in Paradise Valley is not in any better shape than is Los Altos. And it's, you know, you're showing up here on our nice screen here the new walkways at the lake. But if you drive into Paradise Valley and you look at the walkways that were constructed and approved by the city, you know, they don't exist, for one thing. And in the portions where you can actually tell there's a path, it's not going to exist for more than a couple of rainy seasons. So you've put the jeopardy of the citizens of Atascadero on the line to save Darren Shetler money. I can't figure out any other reason that you'd let him build that kind of walkway.
Thank
safety.
You.
Vote no on this item.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing not, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council, and
if there's no comment, I would make a motion.
I wanted to, even though I know we have heard this project a number of times, and we've answered the questions raised a number of times, I would like a staff to just give a brief response to some of the key points, just so it's clear in the public record that these are items we have thoroughly discussed. Staff?
Yes, so last year this item was reviewed by the City Council in regards to these road and intersection improvements. The council directed staff to go back and prepare a thorough traffic analysis with an accompanying update to the EIR. So both those items were accomplished. That was part of what the council reviewed last meeting 2 weeks ago. The issue with the EIR is, yes, it is old. It is still adequate. Traffic levels have changed. That's why we hired a traffic consultant to do a new traffic analysis specifically for the 41 Los Altos intersection. So the recommendation that staff still stands by is that we have done adequate review of those issues and that the proposed mitigation measures will address the issues related to the project build-out.
Well, thank you.
I could add to that, Mayor. In terms of the EIR, there has been an addendum updating the EIR, and that was based on a February 2014 report by WTrans. So the traffic study and the information has been updated.
Thank you. And as far as any improvements related to the state highway, we are following Caltrans's recommendations. Is that correct?
Yes. All the proposed improvements on Highway 41 have been thoroughly reviewed by Caltrans. The applicant is in the process of getting a encroachment permit from Caltrans, where all the proposals or improving
projects that the applicant, the developer, is required to do, and it's phased so that some of the improvements have to be done within a certain time period before the whole project can be expanded to its fullest.
Yes. The way the project revisions were proposed, And that's what would be approved tonight, is it would be a new timeline. So they would have 3 years from when the ordinance becomes effective, which it would be 30 days from now, to complete all the improvements with Caltrans. During that three-year period, they can pull 25 additional house permits. They cannot pull any more permits until all the improvements are completed.
And what would be the maximum built out after those improvements are completed beyond the first 25 permits?
There's approximately, I think, another 60, 65 houses that would still be in later phases of the project.
But they cannot even have a permit issued until all the improvements are completed within 3 years.
So within the first 3 years, they can pull 25 additional permits, and then they have to stop again, which would not even complete half of the project. So more than half the permits would not be able to be pulled until they have completed the improvements on Highway 41.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Kelly, you were about to make a motion.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion that we approve item number 4 of the consent calendar.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion by Councilman Kelly. I believe that was a seconded by Councilman Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. We have several good news items. First, a reminder again that the 2014 Veterans Stand Down event is this weekend. It'll be start on May 16th, beginning at 4 p.m., and will run through May 18th through 4 p.m. at the Vets Hall in San Luis Obispo. The stand down will have many service providers on site to assist the veterans with medical and dental attention, employment counseling, mental health services, legal advice, and much more. A barbecue dinner and meals will be served, so that's a good event for our veterans. We also have the 2014 Peace Officers Memorial coming up, and that's this Wednesday, May 14th. The San Luis Obispo County Criminal Justice Administrators Association, the San Luis Obispo Police Department, and the City of San Luis Obispo will be hosting the annual Peace Officers Memorial Service, at which law enforcement and other agencies throughout the county will be in attendance. This annual non-denominational ceremony will be held at Mission Plaza in San Luis Obispo tomorrow, May 14th at 10 a.m., and the public is encouraged to attend. City Hall Fountains update. It's only been 5 months since the dedication ceremony, but the finish of the City Hall Fountains has already started to bubble and crack. This is a rubberized finish that's on the cement to help keep it waterproof. As a result, we've drained each fountain, and we're waiting for the contractor who completed the restoration to return and make the necessary repairs. So they will be drained for a short period of time as we get these things repaired. Department and the City of Atascadero. Officer Pippin went above and beyond, did a fantastic job. We're very proud to have him as part of our force. We also have the second annual Police versus Special Olympians basketball game. The Police Department is preparing for the second annual Police versus Special Olympian basketball game, which will be held this Friday, May 16th, at the Colony Park Community Center Gymnasium. The pregame activities will start at about 6:30 p.m., and the game will start at 7 p.m. This is an excellent way for the officers from the police department to show their support for Special Olympics and gives our Olympians the ability to interact with our officers at a personal level. It's a great event. I encourage everybody to attend if you can on Friday night. We also have the library grand opening. So the new county library on Capistrano Avenue will hold their grand opening on Saturday, June 7th. From 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The event will include opening remarks, a ribbon cutting with the opening of the doors, music by members of the Slow Youth Symphony, special appearance by Wonder Woman, Spider-Man, Alice in Wonderland, Captain and Dexter, as well as face painting, refreshments, and a special treasure hunt for all ages. Sounds like a great event, very long awaited by this community, and we're excited to have it open. We also have this May 17th, which is Saturday, Children's Day in the Park at the Atascadero Lake Park. That goes from 11 to 3. It's a great event with bounce houses and barbecues and booths and lots of games and things for the kids to do. This year also, there'll be a booth there recognizing Bertha Schultz. Bertha Schultz is the very generous lady, her trust, that gave money to our Atascadero Fire Department, Rotary, Zoo, Morro Bay Fire Department, Cuesta College, North County Christian, and a host of other agencies. So they'll be giving away free ice cream in her honor. We're excited for that. And I'm going to have Brian Pierrick give a brief update on the Walmart hearing. There's been some confusion over where that hearing is going to be held, and I want to make sure everybody gets that right.
Yes, thank you. I announced at the last council meeting, and I'll announce it again. The hearing in the appeal that was filed by the Save Atascadero, formerly opposed Walmart group, is set before the Court of Appeal on May 30th at 9:30 a.m. in Division 6. The hearing is going to be held at the Board of Supervisors chamber, and the address is 1055 Monterey Street in the city of San Luis Obispo, which I believe is what I reported to you the last time I mentioned this. So if there was some confusion, I'm not sure how that came about, but so we all know now that's where it's going to be.
And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? I can't believe anyone would doubt our city attorney, and we hope that carries over to the appeal.
Well, hopefully that'll be the case.
Thank you. We now move on to community forum, which is an opportunity for any member of the public to talk on anything not on the agenda, and we welcome you to come forward. Welcome.
I am Joyce Zimmerman, and I reside at 6225 Lomitas Road, responsible for the following reasons. One, California can't afford to have our precious limited sources of fresh water used for this purpose when we don't have enough now for irrigating crops or providing drinking water for our residents. The oil and gas companies have been allowed to keep secret the chemicals used in the process, so thorough studies have not been made on how they affect our physical bodies when disseminated in the environment. It stands to reason that the chemicals likely contaminate underground drinking water, soils, and the very air we breathe. Much of the extracted oil and gas is shipped out of the USA so that risks taken or encountered are not offset by benefits for our own citizens. It is well known that California is prone to earthquakes. Some states in the USA are now blaming fracking for earthquakes that they have been experiencing in places that have not had earthquakes previously. It is important to keep in mind that the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant is surrounded by various faults which could trigger seismic activity if the right conditions arise. Number five. By producing more oil, the nation will rely less on alternate fuels and sources of power, thereby permitting more emissions to erode our atmosphere and accelerate climate change. We understand that the cities of San Luis Obispo and Arroyo Grande are submitting letters asking the County Board of Supervisors to vote on a countywide ban on fracking. The Justice Committee hopes that the City of Atascadero will join them and put this important matter on a future council agenda for discussion and action. Thank you very much. I have a handout. Could you please?
Thank you. We'll have that distributed. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Don Ritter, and I've been a resident here for 30 years. And during that time, our town has been served by many excellent police chiefs. I believe Bud McHale was chief when I first came to town. And our current chief, Chief Haley, is among the best, I think. And I just wanted to come tonight and offer my public condolences to the chief through the tragic loss of his wife. And my wife and I have been praying for the chief and his daughters, and I know that they're in the hearts and minds of folks here tonight as well as the community at large. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Mike Casey. I've been a resident here for over 11 years now, and I am a pastor in the name of Jesus, thanking you for these servants, not only the ones who sit here, but all those who serve us in this beautiful community. Lord, without these servants' hearts, where would we be today? And we just want to thank you again, ask your hand of blessing on them. We think of Chief Haley, a friend, and what they're going through even this night, that you would give them peace. We ask for those who serve us in those ways for safety. We think of always our fire and policemen, that all that they do, but for all those who serve us, Lord, that you would give wisdom and discernment. And again, thank you and ask that you would bless them in the name of Jesus, our Savior. Amen. Thank you again.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker. And maybe we can get to that elk slide and hold it up there. That would be great. We have a might fit the next speaker. I don't know.
It might. Good evening. My name is David Martin. I am a past exalted ruler of the Elks Lodge here. I'm here tonight on behalf of Kevin Matherly, the current exalted ruler, and the lodge. The Elks have just completed our National Youth Week, and Kevin had an inspiration this year to really involve the youth of Atascadero. Elks find different many ways to help organizations, such as Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. I'm a little nervous tonight, excuse me. But I'm here to extend on behalf of the Lodge a grateful gratitude for the City Council and city staff. One in particular, Commander Joe Allen. He helped organize a ride-along for the youth during the National Youth Week. Same with Ellen Perkins from the Fire Department. Feedback from these youth was very positive, and our goals is to hope that these children of our community will see a different light and maybe pursue that career as time goes on. Marcia Torgensen, thank you very much for getting the proclamation for us. Grand Lodge will love that. I appreciate that. Merrill Malley, Councilman Bob Kelly, thank you. I'm going to destroy your last name, so, sir, thank you very much. And also Heather and Roberta, thank you very much for your gratitude and your help and support. Thank you.
Thank you, and we appreciate all that Elks does in our community on a regular basis.
Tom, could I maybe just go out of place for a minute about the Elks? And I would just like to say that last month we have the Police and Firemen's Appreciation Dinner. And the recipients this year were Christopher Hall from the Police Department and Tom Peterson from the Fire Department. Mm-hmm. It was a very well-attended event, and I want to thank the City Council for participating in it, and I want to thank the Elks for recognizing our public safety people in the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak? Seeing no one approach, we'll close the public comment portion of the community forum portion of the agenda and move on to next item. We do not have... We do have a public hearing on weed abatement, and I believe...
...for the residents. And with that, I'd like to turn that over to any questions the council might have. And again, this is a public hearing, so we need to hear from the public.
Thank you. Any council questions? This is an ongoing item each year, and I commend the fire department for being very proactive and looking for ways to protect our community by thinking ahead of things we can do to protect ourselves, and this is certainly one of those items, so thank you. I'm going to open it up to the public for any comments about this weed abatement program. Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council. And there is an item that suggests we're supposed to discuss any ex parte communications. I don't think we've had any on this.
I just have one question.
Yes, go ahead.
Chief, could you bring us up to date what the tree chipping program will be this year? Because it kind of coincides with the weeds.
This year, the chipping grant we received from FireSafe Council, which is a pass-through grant that ultimately comes from the Bureau of Land Management, authorized the city $16,500 for chipping. They did put quite a few constraints on that chipping in that we had to target high and very high fire severity zones. We couldn't offer chipping blanket citywide, and so we've focused on our high and very high, mostly our west side properties, and sent direct mailings to those individuals that this grant covered, and we're in the process of finishing that chipping program right as we speak. It should be completed by the end of the month.
In the past, was part of the program where people could bring things to the fire station or the yard. Is that in effect, or did that get...
No, that's correct. We do two annual cleanups, and that material is brought to the yard, and we do have money because of the chipping program and FireSafe Council that anyone in the city can bring that material to the Public Works yard on those two annual cleanup or biannual cleanup days, and we will chip it for them free of charge, and it chips right into a big green waste recycle bin.
Thank you.
Any other council questions? Yes, Councilman Sturdivant.
Yes, Chief, could you give people just the drop-dead date as to when this all has to be done? That way people, if they have a notice and they still have time, they can possibly get help to get their weeds cut, or anybody out there who still is kind of hanging on the fence, you know, work still needs to be done.
For the weed abatement program, the drop-dead date is June 1st. We expect, and the city's municipal code expects, all properties to be cut and then the properties be maintained at 4 inches or less starting June 1st.
Thank you very much.
Other council questions? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion. Councilwoman Fonzie.
I move that we hear all objections to the proposed removal of vegetative growth and our refuse and allow or overrule any objections and authorize the fire chief to proceed and perform the work of abatement.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilwoman Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Kelly. There were no objections, so we can go forward with this motion. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And before we go on, I did want to comment. It's a little because it protects our whole community. More recently, someone was burning some trash, essentially, in our public park. I think an old rug or something to that effect. And again, our staff had to intervene and say, you know, that really, those barbecue pits are provided there for a family purpose. And even that is some risk. We want to be careful with that. But when officers are trying to give us some direction, especially when there's such a high risk of fire this time of year, let's try to be good neighbors and heed their caution. So I just would encourage our community to recognize that really our police and fire are doing what they can to keep us all safe. And we need to have them reminding us when we forget sometimes and do something that is not safe. So I just want to offer that. And Chief, thank you for your staff's involvement in our community. We had a comment by Councilwoman Moreno.
I think that's a very good topic to bring up. And I believe, Chief, that yesterday was the deadline for burns. And that's so going forward, if you could let the public know about that.
Yeah, we circulated a press release today that announces that burning for the season has ceased. In years past, we've always allowed burning on weekends after a significant period of time where we burn only Monday through Friday. Unfortunately, and I've been criticized, probably rightfully so, that we didn't allow burning on the weekends. My opinion, we didn't get enough regular during the week burning done and completed out of the way prior to opening it up for the weekends. And unfortunately, that was just due to the short weather, rainy season. We didn't even open burning until 2 months ago because of how short of rain we were. So this season was short, and we do not expect opening burning up until January-ish of next year.
Thank you. Councilman Fonzie.
Yes, Chief, I was wondering, will there be flags up or some way for the public to identify when it's a high fire danger day?
We fly flags at the fire stations. They're basically red pennants that look like a Baltine type pennant. The best way to pay attention to red flag days and watches is when news media and specifically the weather announce those. Those come out of Oxnard, Ventura area and the National Weather Service, along with what's called predictive services out of both Ventura and Los Angeles and Orange counties. And those can be established by county, by part of a county, and they can go up for 5 hours and come down. And so the most reliable method is to pay attention to all of our major news media sources. They have the most up-to-date and up-to-minute, and sometimes we even find out by our own local news media. We actually receive fax fan-outs from the Weather Service. We do try to keep those pennants up when we are in high fire severity time period, red flag, but it does not always happen, especially if we're busy and out on calls and fires.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for taking our comments, Chief. Next item is a public hearing number 2 about amendments and additions to the fee schedule. First, are there any ex parte communications on this item? Seeing none, we can turn it over to staff. And I believe our administrative services, Jerry Rangel, is going to take this one.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, and good evening, Council. The item you have before you tonight is the update to the fee schedule that allows cities to charge fees to consumers of the services up to the cost of providing those services to them. So in other words, the Council can authorize staff to charge fees for city services as long as we don't exceed the cost reasonably borne to provide those services. Otherwise, any excess over that would be considered a special tax, and that requires a vote of 2/3 of the people. So clearly, it's important to determine the actual cost to provide the city services. This is a very significant task that city staff neither has the capacity nor the expertise to execute. Therefore, we've hired Revenue Cost Specialist, or RCS, to perform the fee study. Eric Johnson here has performed the fee study, and he's here to help us. In just a few minutes, I'll turn it over to him, and he can give you some additional detail. He may look a little familiar to you. He was here in 2002 and 2006 and performed similar studies for the city during that time. The last comprehensive fee study that was done here was the one that Mr. Johnson completed in 2006. In 2008 and 2010, the staff presented limited fee evaluations, which the council adopted at that time. But the last full review was done in 2006, and there have been significant changes since that time, including changes in legislation, changes in regulations, internal procedures, city staffing, and changes to the economy. All of these have had an effect on the cost of providing services, so it's a good opportunity right now to collect all this new data and recalculate the numbers. And just as a side note on the topic of the economy, we kind of get frustrated, I think, sometimes, especially me in finance. You look and the economic indicators aren't increasing the way that we wanted to really have a bounce back in revenues. But according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, these consumer price index has increased about 17% from 2006 to 2014. So there has been some changes. In other words, something that would have cost $100 back in 2006 and would now cost about $117. So it's kind of good to keep in mind as we're looking at what the changes in the cost to provide the services to the community are. So let's back up for just a moment and kind of start with a fundamental question. Why do we even charge fees at all? After all, the city is a local government. We get property tax revenue, sales tax revenue. Why can't we just use that to provide services? Why are fees really even necessary? And the answer to that is because we have limited resources. There isn't enough revenue to cover everything for everyone, so we have to make some choices. We have to approach this strategically and formulate a plan that best fits our needs. And this means we need to prioritize our choices. If the If your priority, for example, was to cease charging fees or to subsidize heavily all of the fees, then there would be less funding for other community priorities, including maybe they help to provide resources to keep the staffing level up to meet the demands of these services as well. Neither staff nor RCS recommends full cost recovery on all of the services. Some services have a community benefit. For example, youth sports. It's been consistently subsidized by the city over the years, and that's been a choice. Subsidizing the cost of youth basketball, for example, helps to keep the cost reasonable for an average family. That, in turn, keeps that youth busy, which keeps them out of trouble and indirectly reduces crime and makes a better community for all of us. By subsidizing only certain fees, like youth sports and recreation, and charging full cost recovery on others, as we propose tonight, the city could recover up to about $437,000 additional revenue per year. Now, that's, of course, based on some estimates and, you know, projections, but that kind of gives you an idea of what we're talking about on cost recovery and how that would affect the general fund. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Johnson with RCS to go over some more detail.
Great. Thank you, Jerry. I'm Eric Johnson from Revenue and Cost Specialist, here tonight to present the cost of services or fee study. Before I get started, just want to give you a little bit background on me and my company. We've been doing this since 1980 when two former city managers saw the wave that happened after Proposition 13 and Proposition 4, and I realized that local government was going to need to do a better job of tracking how much it costs to provide services. So they started the company back then. As a company, we've provided over 200 studies to over 200 different cities over those last 35 years. I myself have been doing this for almost 25 years. I've worked in almost 100 different cities. And so this is what we do, and this is what I do. And also, before I get started, I just wanted this was a process that we went through with staff, and I wanted to thank staff for all their help in having the numerous meetings that we had. Without them, I could not have prepared this report. So I want to thank them, and especially Cindy Chavez and Jerry Rangel and Admin Services. So this was definitely a lot of effort on everybody's part. So what have we done? Well, really, what we've done is recast the city budget as if it were a business. Local government is great, and governmental accounting is great at identifying what are the various different departments cost. But it's not designed to determine what do the various different services provided to the public cost. And so that's what we've done here through this process, is we identified the cost of providing services to the public. So it's just like when you go to the store and you buy a can of corn. You know, when you buy that can of corn, you're not just paying for that can there and that checker in front of you. You know you're paying for the farmer. You know you're paying for the transportation, the people at the store to stock it, as well as the checker in front of you. We've done the same type of thing with this study here. We identified who provides services to the public, but also who provides the services that support those that provide services to the public. So you won't see a city council service in here. You won't see a city manager service, because city council, city manager, finance, IT, building support, building maintenance, all those are part of the administrative support costs and are part of the cost to providing services to the public, because they provide support to those people. The departments provide to the public. We sat down and met with staff, and we had numerous meetings. We identified what are the services being provided, whether they're fee-supported or not fee-supported, whether they're providing services to the public or providing services to other parts of the organization. We want to know what staff's doing and how much time it takes them to do it. And so that process was numerous meetings until we all felt comfortable with that time data, that it accurately reflected where staff was spending its time. The other part of that is the cost component. We developed a fully allocated hourly rate for every position. And so that includes salaries, of course, and benefits, of course, but also includes a share of the operating expenses within each department from the budget. But we also developed a cost allocation plan, which is just a big, thick book that in a lot of detail allocates out the administrative support cost in a fair and equitable manner. And so the We've allocated out the cost of finance, for instance, and broken out its different component parts, like accounts payable is allocated back to the departments by the number of payables by department. So they're only getting their share of that part of it. And we did the same thing with all the other various administrative support functions. And so we identified a cost for not only city overhead, but departmental overhead, overhead within administrative support within a department. So we had a fully allocated hourly rate for every position in the city. So we then took that cost, we matched that up with that the time that we have, and now that becomes the cost of providing services, the various different services that we identified, the fully allocated cost of those services. The next step is then community-supported versus personal choice, tax-supported versus fee-supported. And then we also went through, and for those that we identified as personal choice or fee-supported, we went through, we made recommendations to recover, in most cases, 100% of the cost. Key part of this was the community-supported versus personal choice. Now, as I mentioned, we identified the cost providing all services that the city provides to the community, to its customers. Part of that is going to be community-supported. Those things that when people say, this is what my tax dollars pay for, this is what their tax dollars pay for. Things like police patrol, and fire suppression, and fire EMS, and street maintenance, and park maintenance, all those things that have no other option, really, than to be paid for with taxes. The other part of that is personal choice, or fee services. And these are things that we can identify the customer, the service is measurable, it also benefits a specific individual or group within the community, but there's no requirement that they be 100% fee supported. There are subsidy levels that can be identified for various different services, and that, of course, is up to you to decide what services should be subsidized and to what level. And this becomes important because, as Jerry mentioned earlier, you can only spend a dollar once. In local government, especially in California local government, there's really just two big broad pots of money, taxes and grants, which has been severely limited by Proposition 13, and fees, which a year after Proposition 13 passed, the voters passed Proposition 4 that said you can charge the cost reasonably borne to provide services, to recover for the cost of those services. And so that's what we've done here. We've matched up those fees with personal choice services and the taxes and grants with community-supported services. But to the extent that the fees don't cover the cost providing the service covered, and that subsidy, most of that subsidy will then go away with the new fee recommendations. In public safety, you have things that are not going to be 100% fee-supported, even though we've tentatively identified them as 100% fee-supported. Things like police false alarm and fire false alarm. There's a fee in place, but it kicks in after the fourth alarm. So the first three alarms are currently free, and so that's part of the cost that is not being paid for by the fees, because most people don't use that part of the service because the fee was designed to get compliance. And that's where public safety fees are a little different, and you're not going to get that 100% cost recovery because the goal is somewhat different. It's not just revenue recovery. It's trying to get people to do the right thing, fix their alarm. And so most people do fix their alarm and never pay a fee, but they're still receiving that service that takes away from that general tax service that the communities that the community receives. If they're responding to a false alarm, they can't respond to a real alarm. In the leisure and cultural area, those services are just different. They're going to be subsidized. They have been subsidized. If you wanted to charge 100% cost recovery, the services would probably go away because the community wouldn't pay for it. People wouldn't use their discretionary tax dollars and pay the full cost of that service. In most cases, the recreation services are recovering more than 100% of their direct cost, direct salaries and benefits on that program, the direct operating supplies in that program. But when we add in the fully burdened administrative cost, most cases they're not recovering more than 50%. And so by its very nature, it's not going to be 100% cost recovery. It's not designed to be and never will be if you want to continue to provide that service. And so we don't anticipate that gap changing. There are some changes in the fees, but it'll have a minor impact on that gap. And that, again, is just the nature of recreation services. The maintenance services and the administrative services with the fee recommendations, those are relatively small dollar amounts. With the fee recommendations, we anticipate those gaps to go away. So at the end of the day, we've identified about $437,000 in possible new revenue if all the recommendations in this report are enacted. And we're trying to be very conservative with our numbers. We don't want to overestimate the possible new revenue, so in cases, there's numerous cases where maybe there will be a service, maybe there won't be. And so I've said, okay, there won't be, we'll put zero revenue. But there may be one of these services that pop up that turns into revenue. But we're trying to be very conservative in our revenue estimates. So the goal of this project was to identify the full cost, provide services to the public, to make recommendations to fairly and equitably recover those costs. And now it's up to you as the elected representatives of your community to decide what you want to subsidize, what should pay full cost, where should your tax dollars be used? Should it be used to support these various parts of various different personal choice services, or should it be used to only for those things that can only be used to support, like police, fire, public works, maintenance, those types of things? So I'll leave it to any questions.
Very good. Thank you. Questions from council?
Very minor part of the cost of a development and is not the deciding factor in whether a development goes from one community to another community. And so we're saying this is what it costs to provide the service here. If you want to recover that cost, this is the fee that will recover that cost. But we did not look into whether or not another city is charging more or less, partly because we don't know if that city has been through this process. We don't know even if it has, if it's decided to subsidize certain things. And so it's very difficult to do an apples-to-apples comparison based on just looking at the fees, because we don't know what policies went into it. We don't know what effort to come up with those fees went into it. When I first started doing this years and years ago, most cities just determined by fees by looking at what the city next door was doing. And so you had this circular pattern, and strangely enough, everyone had roughly around the same fees. And so we really tried to get away from that and just say, here's what it costs to provide the service here. It may be different someplace else, but here's what it costs to provide it.
And one other question regarding the fees themselves, that I'm assuming that you use the amount that it costs per employee or to provide the service per hour. Do you use the fees, the salaries that are actually in place in our city, or do you do this on a statewide basis so you'd be comparing San Francisco to Atascadero?
No. We looked at each individual employee's actual salary. We looked at the various benefits that occurred here. So all the costs that we've come up with are City of Atascadero costs that exist in your budget.
Thank you.
Councilman Kelly.
I think earlier you said the consumer index had gone up 17%. Within your study, what would the increased percentage be on the fee proposals that you have? Do you have any idea?
It really widely varies, partly because since it's been so long since the study's been done, there's been a lot of changes in the organization, as of course you're aware of. And so if we were just looking at just straight cost, if everything were equal from then to now, it would have been about that 17 to 20%. But because of the change in the organization, there have been changes in personnel who are doing the work. Sometimes it's now a higher paid person who's doing the work than was before. Sometimes it's the other way around. And so I can't give you a direct answer because it really widely varies from service to service, and so much has changed.
For the local area, would you say that 17% is higher than what the people have increased in their income over the last 6 years? I mean, so are we taking more money out of the consumer's pocket to feed us?
I really can't answer that.
Could you give me a little clearer idea what reasonably born, what that would be compared to private enterprise?
But it's almost the same as private enterprise. It comes from the author's intent documents from Proposition 4, and those were the same people that did Proposition 13, and most of them were businessmen. If you remember, it was the Apartment Owners Association that kind of drove Proposition 13, and a lot of that happened in Proposition 4 also. So it was a very business-oriented philosophy that went into determining what costs reasonably borne were. So it identified things like salaries and benefits, but also projected future expenses for any bonding you might do, asset replacement. And so it had a very business orientation. And so the authors of Proposition 4 wanted government to act more like. If you're looking at the time spent to type the email, write the email, or just send the email.
A short three-line email.
You're probably looking at a couple of dollars. Just a ballpark guess.
Would $77.48 be excessive, you think?
It depends on what went into that email, if there was any research that was involved. That sounds to me like an hour of somebody's time, right. And so it possibly involved more than just actually typing the email.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman Sturdivant.
Yes, Mr. Johnson, when I was reading through the staff report and I saw the $437,000 and going through the numbers you were talking about, I was wondering, okay, where is that coming from? But then when I saw the community development, that I'm assuming that's the section that we're mostly targeting to get that money from. So
that's correct.
That makes it a lot clearer. I noticed in this report there's a lot of fees that some went up, some went down, some stayed the same. So it seems like there's quite a where are we going with all this? But now, thank you very much for that piece of the puzzle, because it makes a lot more sense that where the areas of where we've been funding from the general fund. So very good report, and there's a lot of good information there, and I was very, very interested to see that we are the funding for things like basketball and a lot of the social functions and things that we do, that none of that was changed while still being able to get to this community development, and now that was a very good report. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And I assume if, for example, a council member writes an email making $300 a month versus if our city attorney writes an email for the same hour, it's going to cost more, is my experience. Councilman Kelly, again.
Yes, it seems like most of the area of concern is in development and what have you, where we're going to be collecting the money and what have you. And it's always been a point of interest of trying to expedite the process here in the city. With the $435,000 gain that you're estimating from this, is there any guarantee that that money will go back to the source of where the problem is to generate the money, or is this just going to go into the general fund and go where maybe somebody wants it to go?
Well, it goes into the general fund, but the expenses are also coming out of the general fund. This is development services for the most part, so they're general fund funded, and so it goes into the big happy general fund, and that's where the expenses are.
Well, I was kind of directing that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
to staff, I guess my question is, you know, is there a priority to hire extra people in the planning and building department to expedite that, since that's where we're talking about most of the money coming from and providing the service to the people who are going to pay?
That would be up to the city council as part of their budget process. You guys get to decide where the money is. This is money that we're currently spending out of taxes and fees, so it's to pay for our current employees at 100% subsidy level. You could hire more. Obviously, that would mean we were spending more to provide those services, or you could choose to use those monies to hire more police services or fire or something else. That is your decision. You are the sole choosers of where that money goes.
Well, not to put you on the spot, but maybe I have it wrong. It's always been my understanding that the city council hires two people and the city manager takes care of everybody else.
True. Where it is for, you know, this current volume and this service provider, that's going to be a council decision.
Thank you. Councilman Fonzie.
Mr. Johnson, we've seen a great increase in regulation coming down from the state that has increased the cost of doing business. I'm wondering if you were able to put that into the cost structure and the amount that we would need to charge. And I think that what we would see probably, and maybe you could clarify, is that those who are going to get a building permit for whatever reason are going to be paying considerably more.
There's definitely more cost. We didn't break it out specifically to the added components, things like the MPDS regulations and the stormwater regulations and the green building code. And so it definitely takes more time to inspect a building today than it did, say, 10 years ago. And so we've reflected that cost.
And so actually it's probably more than the 17% of the consumer price index plus.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. No lights flashing, so let me make sure I understand this. Always interesting to me to hear cost accounting as a former economics major, but I like those things like opportunity cost and things. But it seems to me we have a choice of, for example, being business friendly and we want to provide a service, let's say in the area of development, we could reduce the service, have less staff time. That would perhaps draw the permit process out and go back to where it might have taken a year to process the permit. We've worked at streamlining that so that we can have a very quick permit streamlining process. Councilman Kelly, Councilman Fonsi worked on that for a few years, and staff certainly has done a good job. But in a sense, by throwing more staff time at a project and also providing the service of intervening with state agencies so that our community has the benefit of working that through, we're essentially increasing the cost. But we're reflecting the cost of that service, and if we don't recover that cost, then we're shifting that cost, really taking it, and one of the choices would be reducing police and fire services, which is doesn't have the opportunity to do cost recovery because it's hard to identify a customer after the fact. So it seems like it's that dilemma that, well, you're only counting costs that are actually spent, and we're choosing to provide more service because it's actually beneficial to the private sector. They want it to be a faster service. And unfortunately, we can't have a vision of, well, we want to even do better and add costs. If the cost doesn't already exist, you can't raise the cost in anticipation we're going to do better. We have to provide the service first. And if folks choose to come to us, apparently they have because we process more permits than any other city, then we can recover the cost if we spend it first. So is that all right? I don't have a misconception in there.
Yeah, the staff is certainly here. But at the same time, you have this level of staff based on the past volume of work and the future projected volume.
If we have a lot of discussion, I may open up public comment one more time before a vote. But at this point, we do have Councilman Kelly.
Thank you. As I've said in the past, I'm not a fond person for increasing taxes or fees. And I was really quite surprised Thursday when I checked the internet to see that this was actually on the agenda. And I did pick up my agenda, and you know, there's a book this thick. There's like 360 some pages within this item. And there were some good points made this evening regarding some fees. But at this point, I really don't feel comfortable that I can make a decision for the impact that this could possibly have. I would like to maybe have a little more time to go over it and go over it with staff. I have a building permit here on one of the self-help houses. There's 31 items that people get feed for, and on a little 1,300 square foot house, you know, the city fees are $24,219. You know, I'd like to sit down with staff and actually see what kind of impact are we putting on the housing industry in our city. We're all proponents of affordable housing, and like I say, I want to feel comfortable with the decision I've made. I know in the past on the Planning Commission at times I have made decisions, not that they were wrong, but I had wished that I had more time to actually look into it and feel comfortable that I'm doing the right thing for the citizens of Atascadero. I have discussed it with some building people in town and business people, and they were all surprised that none of them had heard that this was coming up on the agenda. So I think we owe it to some of these people, the housing and building industry, maybe to look it over and have a little input into it, and maybe be a little more transparent than possibly how this was brought up to us.
Okay, well, that said, do we have any other ex parte we need to disclose if we've gotten any input about anything that's on tonight's topic? No? Okay. Any other council questions? We can enter in some deliberation or discussion. We have Councilman Moreno, followed by Councilwoman Fonzi.
I had a question earlier yesterday about the postage that hadn't gone up. Is there an answer? Director Frace, maybe you have an answer for that one.
Yeah, I think that was more an oversight than anything else. That was in a later section of the fee schedule, so during our review process, we just didn't actually look into that for an update. So it was probably more of an oversight than anything else.
Okay, so can we simply put into it that, you know, postage will increase as postage rates go up or something like that, so it's not staying the same and we're not losing money on simple stamps?
I'd refer that to Mr. Johnson.
Okay.
My understanding is that, yes, you can.
Okay. I think that would be a good thing to do. A couple of thoughts. It was interesting, Mr. Johnson, so the authors of Prop 4 took a very business-oriented approach, and it sounds like they certainly did in terms of the cost aspect, but where that stops is at full cost recovery. It doesn't include making money, so we can't legally make money. So I want that to be very clear to the public. This is not a money-making proposition that any of us are sitting here talking about. It really is full cost recovery. And who's bearing the costs of what the city does on a day-to-day basis.
Could I inject a thought on that, though, if I may?
Yes.
If you can hold your... You're young enough to be able to hold the rest of your thoughts. We'll forget our thoughts if we don't get them out quick. So
thank you
for... Councilman Kelly and I appreciate that. But I think I look at it as a business decision. I think the permit process is a good example of that. We can't make a profit, but when our community is profitable, it's a feedback loop where we all benefit. And again, I talked with the development community years ago. In fact, when we very first implemented cost recovery in planning fees, when I first came on council, we first implemented this. I remember talking with Dennis Maresco and other folks that are really folks that have been successful in the industry, and they really pretty much said, you know, the cost is not such an issue, it's what's the benefit. And for most folks, if you can make the process go from a year to 3 months, they're willing to pay a lot more cost for staff to get that processing, because though we can't make a profit, it turns into profit in the private sector if their borrowing costs go down by 9 or 10 months and some of those other factors. So, again, from a business standpoint, we try to think from a business standpoint of what benefits our community. And though we may not directly reap that benefit, if our community can make a benefit and increase over time, seeing a new motel come into town, the increased transient occupancy tax creates a feedback loop. So again, by investing staff time into that, though it's a cost, the revenue, I think, does create an increase in the future. So I just wanted to throw that thought out there,
Tom,
before I forgot. And you're going to sneak in, too. Okay?
If I could, you know, at times that is true. It all depends on what the economic condition is, the person that you mentioned, and I think the project that you're talking about. You know, the profit on those houses were six digits, and that's not the truth anymore. Most of those people, or a lot of those people, not the person that you mentioned, have gone bankrupt because of the costs have gone so high. They had so much money invested in land and what have you. So, you know, there's kind of two sides to the story. Obviously, time is money. I was in the building business, and if you can get a permit a lot shorter, you save a lot of time. There's got to be a little balance in there somewhere, and I think we're still in rough economic times myself. We see these developments under construction and what have you, and I think those were beneficial to the people because they bought most of the property out of foreclosures and what have you, but I'm kind of wondering what's going to happen in a couple of years when all of these developments are built out. And the cost of building has gone up so high because of all these state regulations.
Well, we'll have time more for that discussion.
Are we going to price ourselves out of the market?
That's why they call it the free market. You win sometimes and you lose sometimes. I'm sure we're going to be back on that topic more. And, okay, I've learned my lesson, Heather. Thank you for letting us have that time. And no matter what great thought I have to share, I'm not doing it again. So, Heather,
all right.
You've got it, followed by Councilman Fonzie, then Councilman Sturdivant. And Bob and I will wait our turns. Thank you.
Okay. With regards to that postage issue, which is obviously relatively small in comparison to the rest, are there any other items where there could be flexibility like that so we don't get stuck in this position of 8 years later we're trying to catch up? and then it becomes a shock to everybody. So is there some, is there any other flexibility? Does it make sense what I'm asking, where there are other fees where we could say, you know, it's this or this percentage of, or as something increases, what are the options, Mr. Johnson?
One thing I'd recommend is that on an annual basis, without having to go through this process, update the fees by inflation. So if you're updating the fees by inflation from year, even if it's, you know, 3-4%, by the time you go through this process again and really look at what it costs, you're not as much behind the eight ball. And so that's the big thing I'd recommend.
And that would just be part of the wording of the
ordinance? You still have to come back and actually approve it on a year-to-year basis.
Got
maybe,
it. Okay.
Maybe it's part of the budget.
Okay. Let's see. Secondly, I do want to say that we did talk about this process of looking at our fees, I believe, first at strategic planning in 2013. So it's been almost a year and a half that we have been talking about this. Last year, during the budget process, we budgeted for, well, it ended up being Mr. Johnson. He wasn't specifically in the budget. But we did budget for this last year in the City Council. We passed that. So we all knew this was coming. Did we know it was today? And did we have a lot of time to look over this? So I can certainly appreciate Councilmember Kelly's concern about really wanting to delve into this. So I do know that. But I did, in the fairness of transparency and everything, we've been talking about this for a year and a half, and knowing that we needed to look at it, we've budgeted it. So I did want to put that out there. The last thing I wanted to bring up is the zoo. And we look at the zoo and we see that of recreation services, the zoo is 43% of that subsidy. And certainly there's a benefit, and I know there, you know, and plenty of people can talk about that, so I won't do that at the moment. What I'm wondering is, maybe this is something we can talk about during the budgeting process, is there room to look at fees for non-residents? Because currently, if you have a lot of non-residents coming to the zoo, essentially residents of Atascadero are subsidizing. And I know there's tourism benefit and there's things to look at, but, you know, is there a possibility where maybe we would consider looking at a different rate schedule for out-of-town guests to the zoo?
Thank you. Councilwoman Fonzi, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant.
Thank you. A couple of questions. First one would be for Warren. Warren, when you met with the businessmen and the developers, and I know this was, you know, some time back, but they were talking about ways to streamline the process and make planning go smoother and easier. Was fees mentioned at that time?
There was some discussion of fees. I believe most of the discussion was actually focused on the impact fees, which are the larger fees for roads and bridges and that sort of thing, and especially the fees for the second units. So I know that was a specific point that was raised, that there seemed to be a need to revisit the second unit capital facility fees. But in terms of the permit fees, these staff recovery fees, I don't recall there being a significant discussion about that.
Okay, thank you. And a question, and this may be for you, Warren. I'm not sure who to direct this to, and it could be Rochelle, that I'm seeing in the business world, people are going more and more towards a paperless society, a more efficient way of using our technology. Do you see that we could perhaps save money by beefing up our technology end, and it would lead to lower costs and lesser fees?
I think that community development has been looking into that where possible. A lot of it is not necessarily driven by the paper as much as the staff time in talking with project developers, making sure that things are done, and reviewing those. But sometimes there is a savings, particularly on the developer's end. That is one of the things that came out of the developer meetings that we had, is they'd like to see some electronic versions. We are dabbling in that on a couple of items, I believe, and we'll continue to look at that. I don't think it is the panacea that will will save it all. I think that our largest driver of our fees right now has been the additional state regulations, CEQA process, all of those on that development process.
Doggone. It would have been nice if we could have done that.
Well, I think we're saying we did it.
Yes, well, but if we could save money and save fees, it would be nice for the public, obviously. I think philosophically it's something that the council needs to talk about in terms of what we subsidize and what we don't. And this may be a bigger discussion. We may need to put this on strategic planning mid-year and talk about for instance, the zoo or whatever we choose to do. But obviously, the biggest burden is going to fall on developers and those who build. We looked at our graph here, and that's where the largest fee increase would be, whereas others, for instance, renting a room at the pavilion or going to the zoo or participating in recreation is not going to go up as much. And this is something that we as a body need to discuss in the public. That there may be some opinions out there that we need to hear. Bob, I understand what you're saying. This was a big document. This was a lot to read. There's a lot of meat in this. It was a good report. I do appreciate that. But it does take a while to digest this one. So I wouldn't be opposed to putting this out and delaying.
Obligations. Just I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go on to Councilman Sturtevant.
Yeah, Mr. Johnson, a clarification and a question. You, if I heard you correctly, you said that the report was done last in 2006?
Yes.
And then we made adoptions or we made corrections to our fees in 2008, was that? Or
yes,
10?
There were some minor, not minor, but lesser comprehensive adjustments that were made by staff in 2008 and 2010.
Okay. Did it have anything to do with development? Did it have anything to do with this area we're talking about?
Some of them were development. There were a few kind of changing some of the things for, I think, trying to kind of streamline a little bit more, making things available to streamline permit process. Mm-hmm. Most of the majority of them, if I can recall correctly, were centered around recreation.
Okay. And then that was right at the very beginning of this whole recession, 2008. So, you know, we've been through a real rough time, and we're still in a rough time. A lot of people are having a hard time making ends meet. But, you know, we're bearing a lot of the brunt from our general fund. So I did, in looking at the report, it seemed that all the things that we were, like the pavilion and the zoo and those type of things, the recreation areas, we did not make changes there in that area. So we are shifting this to more of the development and building group of people here in Atascadero. Was this noticed very well to that group to be able to get this information out to them that we're doing this?
Actually, a public notice went out twice in the Atascadero News, once on May the 2nd and once on May the 9th, notifying of the public hearing today.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I often quote Pogo, my favorite little illustration of we have met the enemy and he is us. Every time you talk about in government increasing the process, by definition, you're increasing the cost. And there is a cost to the public process. We certainly have tended to err on the side of doing more rather than less, but every time you do extend that, you are essentially increasing the costs because there's a lot of staff time goes behind us deliberating. So the quicker we can make decisions, as you would do in the private sector, the more you can save costs. And I think part of how you make decisions quicker is you focus on principles and that process so that's as streamlined as we can. And I think for me, having looked at this for 12 years now, it was the first topic that hit me in the face. In fact, in this very building, when I first came on council, we talked about fees. And we kind of adopted some principles that seemed to make sense. And one, thoroughly understanding opportunity costs, that if you do one thing, you can't do another. But there's also a concept in economics called substitute goods. And in a sense, I've erred on the side of actually expecting staff to do more rather than less. Now, we could say staff do less, and we can reduce our time and reduce our costs. However, we've found that if our staff do less, in fact, we've talked with the Region Water Quality Control Board. They said, you got a choice. Your staff can implement wastewater, septic system inspections, or their staff can do it. Having sat on the Region Water Quality Control Board and seeing what the cost structure, cost recovery system is there, where they can make a profit essentially because they can charge punishment fees, and I've got anecdotal stories about that, but I saw that was much more costly to our constituents than having our staff take a little more time and say, we're going to come up with a system to review septic systems, for example, And we avoided an annual inspection every year that was proposed by the Region Water Quality Control Board. And yes, our staff have to do a little bit more, and that turns out to some more cost for our staff's involvement. But again, I look at that substitution, our staff essentially protecting our community by having a one-stop shopping. Sort this out so that our community doesn't have to do as much work on trying to understand all of these multiple other agencies. So I think it's good that our staff is working for us, just like we're more responsible, I believe, than other levels of government. Takes me an hour to get through the post office talking to folks. Likewise, our staff, I think, is better equipped to make a good decision in our community than outside agencies. So yes, in some ways, I think we are working at having our staff do more, which increase the cost. But I'm looking at overall, I think the costs are lower on a project, which again gets back to helping our businesses do better in the long run. So that's how I'm looking at it as a principal. I see I've talked long enough to stimulate Councilman Sturdivant.
Yes, you did. Actually, just another question. This is for Rochelle. You said it's a 1 year before these fees kick in or thereabouts?
No, it's actually 60 days, but what that means, because a lot of these fees are development, that those things that are in the hopper or already submitted and all of that are still going to be under the old fee schedule. So particularly in development, it takes some time till the new fees start coming in.
Okay, so there will be a period of time where there can be some public outreach, like people can know this is coming, they'll have an idea. So, I mean, knowing numbers, looking like Bob had a permit here that, I mean, if you would actually look at those lines and have someone come in, you can say, well, this is the impact, the upcoming impact.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And again, what ended up happening, I'm doing large generalizations, is that our building permit fees, the cost of the building inspector and those are actually remain the same. Our planning fees were both up and down. Warren took a hard look at each one. Eric doesn't do this in a vacuum. He comes back and says, okay, this is what I come up with the cost, goes back and reviews it with Warren to see if that meets Warren's gut check. And Warren also thinks about it strategically. There was something, what was it, an environmental negative declaration where he was saying, hey, not all you CUPs require this step, so let's break that out into a separate fee. So therefore, those CUPs that don't need that actually get a lower fee, and that those that do, now those two combined fees are, will receive both. So they're done very carefully, and Warren might want to talk a little bit.
I think with the planning fees, we did look at where our process is more efficient, and I think because of the design review committee, there's smaller projects, we can move more quickly. So the fees that typically the small businesses encounters, like the administrative use permit fee, is pretty much flat. The minor use permit, which is a business moving into an existing building, we actually reduced that fee because we can move that one a lot quicker than we thought in the past. As we get into the more complicated permits that are usually new entitlements, new structures, there was increases there, but we did try to adjust those better. Like Rochelle just said, we used to include a mandatory neg deck CEQA fee in all use permits, but many of them are exempt and don't require that, so we split that out as a separate fee. So if you require a new building with a new CEQA process, that one's going to be more, but if you don't need that, you won't pay that fee. So we've tried to fine-tune it so that the fees are as tight to what the service is that we can predict at this point.
Thank you.
It concludes your questions. Well, I think you brought up a good point that I realize is we essentially have added more steps. So if on some projects you can complete what you want to do in fewer steps, you're going to get off cheaper and faster. But if something requires more steps, then it's going to cost more, which you'd expect. I do think, though, as Councilman Kelly pointed out, the council is well aware of times there are things where we need to adapt. And I think that's why we created the Design Review Committee, where we have Councilman Kelly and Councilman Fonzie sit on there, where we can refer things to and kind of do an expedited process. And just getting through this tough economy, we essentially extended our former permit fees and even our permits for a number of years. Most cities let them expire. You didn't do anything with it for a year. Sorry, you're out of luck. Every year we met and said, we're going to extend those permits. That's why we had more business, I think, at the a little bit of a turnout because we had all these permits in the hopper, so to speak. We waived any increased fees. We allowed the old rules to stand, and there were a lot of projects that got forward because we did have some empathy for the fact that no one could get a permit going for a while. So I think where we can, we have some ways that we can mitigate in tough times with our policy. But I think it is very critical that who is sitting up here, as Councilman Kelly says, we're the ones that are going to determine where this revenue goes. We can subsidize one area or another. You can't spend the dollar twice. But we're going to have to make that decision, and we're going to have to be the ones held accountable to the public. And so it's important who's sitting here when it comes to spending those dollars. I don't see any other lights. I don't see anyone in the public really wanting to have any more input. Councilman Fonzie.
Regardless of whether we delay this and hear it again or we decide on this tonight, I think it's important that we discuss perhaps having an annual increase. One of the reasons this is particularly onerous, I believe, is because it's a 17% increase, and we haven't done this every year. So
yes,
it's falling on the next person to
yes
pull that permit, and they're going to say, ouch. Had we gone through this and done this very gradually, there wouldn't be quite the pain that we're going to be feeling. So I think it's very important, regardless of whether we delay or we take action tonight, that we somehow modify this to put in some way to review this yearly.
Good point. However, we've basically argued both sides of that question, because on the other hand, we've said, gee, it's been tough times for 5 or 6 years, and we didn't really want to add any more burden, and maybe that was a good thought or not, or maybe we had a council policy, and I've pointed out to staff that we said we supported full cost recovery. This is something that should have come back to the council, and we had to make this decision sooner. I think it's a point well taken. I agree with you. I think we've got to stay current, and we should have these budget discussions regularly. So I would have to agree with you. But again, I think the buck stops with us. I think it's something we have to take responsibility for and say we want to have this review. Certainly every 2 years if we have a two-year budget cycle, but annually we should definitely have this discussion. Thank you. I have Councilwoman Fonzie has completed. Councilman Sturdivant.
Just a quick to add to that, I agree with Councilwoman Fonzie that I think a strategic planning once a year, we should get a finger of the pulse of where we are with our fees and just determine whether or not that's something we need to pursue that year or not. So I agree with you.
Councilwoman Moreno.
I thought we were more looking at not where are we with our fees, but more of increasing by inflation, so putting that factor in. So we can still look at that yearly, but we weren't doing a whole new analysis. We were simply saying, okay, what is inflation and increasing by that, and then making that decision as a body.
You could incorporate both thoughts into a motion.
Okay. And then let me ask, the zoo issue is something that we could take care of within Finance Committee. And if that came out of Finance Committee, then bring that to Council. Would that be correct?
I would suggest a follow-up motion. Let's keep this issue clear and any modification. I think you, Councilwoman Fonzie, and you, Councilwoman Moreno, I think could be incorporated in. And then a follow-up recommendation to staff is those topics, and we could pick any that you want to review, we could just direct staff to do that. I think it might be good to have that as a separate action. I would support that.
Okay. So the recommendation.
We're still on Councilwoman Moreno, and I've learned that we're not going to interrupt her again.
I thought she was making a motion.
I am.
And that's always in order. We can.
Okay.
You've closed the comment session?
We've closed public comment, but we're in deliberation. A motion is always in order, whether we second it or not or pass it.
Isn't the motion made after the council?
You still have discussion after a motion. You have the floor, Councilman Moreno?
Okay. So I would recommend Council adopt draft Resolution A establishing a schedule of fees and charges for city services, and that adding that we look at it on an annual basis to see if we will increase by inflation, if there's anything that's off the mark that needs to be changed, and also continue the discussion yearly on what we subsidize or not.
Okay, before we take a second, is that clear enough to staff? Is that a motion that if it passed, you can implement?
I think we're good from a staff standpoint. Legally, is that all right?
As I understood the motion, we're not adding to the resolution that there will be annual CPI increases, only that the resolution will be as it's presented before you here tonight, and that you're asking that this come back during strategic planning to review to see if a CPI increase would be appropriate at that time.
Correct.
Okay, then that's fine.
So there's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Moreno, seconded by Councilman Strivant. We can now have as much discussion as folks would like. Councilman Fonzie.
A question for Mr. Johnson. How do other cities deal with this annual dilemma? Do they put it into their report that you put forward?
It's generally not part of the resolution. The fee resolution is more of a policy, and where I've seen it work well, it's usually part of the budget process. So as you approve the budget, you approve the new fees at that time. So there's a new fee resolution that comes before you at that time.
And obviously it wouldn't reflect the things that are coming up with the state and regulation, so we would still need to have you come occasionally and give us more information.
You're still going to need to go through some type of process. I recommend every 3 to 5 years. Typically the organization has changed enough by then. By doing the CPI increases, it just means you won't have as big of an increase at that point, that you're keeping up with it somewhat, so it definitely helps.
Very good. Thank you.
Councilman Kelly.
Yes, I support the idea of looking at this at strategic planning every year. I think that's a really, really good idea. And the reason for that is so we can review it. I do not feel comfortable that I've had enough time to completely review what's in front of us tonight and make a knowledgeable decision on what the impact of these fees would be on the community.
Thank you. Does that conclude your comments at the moment?
Yes.
And in light of that, if this motion is adopted, at what point would these fees actually take effect, and how will that be communicated to the public?
The fees would take effect within 60 days of adoption of the resolution. So we could...
Certainly we can do some more outreach. Right now, obviously, it's on our website and a couple of other things. We can have Warren and Community Development and their staff will certainly be dispersing that to known developers, people that have expressed interest certainly in working with their parcels or getting a CUP or some other things so that they know that they're going to go effect, and we'll try and get in there. We've also been very lenient in trying to be very accepting of things right underneath the deadline that may not, you know, necessarily match, or they don't necessarily have all their T's dotted or T's crossed and I's dotted. So we're very lenient, and I would expect that to continue unless Mr. Frace has a different thought.
So if they make it in the door within the next 60 days, they have a...
They're still on the old fees.
Okay.
There has to be something there. I mean, we can't just, hey, I want to do this, but... We probably won't be as strict as we usually are.
Is this the last discussion we're going to have on this? Is there going to be a second reading or anything, or this is it? Tonight we're going to make a decision.
This is it. Tonight you'll make the decision.
Councilman Moreno, we do have a motion on the floor, so it's really discussion about the motion that's on the floor.
Right.
Of course, you can call the question if you choose as
well. No, I was not going to do that. I'm happy to have discussion. And I can appreciate some of my fellow council members here feeling like they want to have a better handle on this amount of information. And I think the approach that I've taken is that I've looked line by line at every single fee things went up, things went down, if things seemed like, why did something go up 200% or 300, something like that, and asking those kind of questions and getting clarity from this report on why that happened. What are we subsidizing? What are we not? And Mr. Johnson helped to clarify a lot more of that tonight. And so I think as a council member, it can be challenging, but it is taking that broader look at things. And I know for me as a detailed person, I can get very stuck in detail, and I'm trying very hard not to do that because I'm trusting the detail to the experts that we've hired to do that. So I do appreciate that, but that's just the approach that I've taken.
Thank you. Well, I too, maybe it's because it's more of a economic analytical approach that I've appreciated you over the years with the reports. It's made sense to me, and it's been easier for me to follow, I think, this process rather than more of a feeling-based, I think fees are too high or too low, which was the approach that was really taken by councils before this process was adopted. So I appreciate that, and thank you for your research. Councilman Fonzie.
I think that because Mr. Kelly didn't have the time to go through it, perhaps, I'm not sure if I understood, but the feeling that I got from your discussion was that you felt that the public didn't have time to prepare for the fee increase. It's not necessarily your approach to this. It's more the public. Well, Do I understand you correctly?
It's not only me, but I think there's a financial impact to a lot of people out there. And I think they ought to be made aware of what's going on, so they may have the opportunity to come here during public comment and render an opinion or actually fully understand how the fee system works. It's part of the education process. And like I said, I've talked to a couple developers. I've talked to some people in businesses. And they said, what are you talking about, fee increases? And I said, well, that's what I thought. too. So I just think it's part of the process that we need to be transparent and to let the people know what we're doing and why we're doing it. I still have a few more questions. You know, I could stay here till 2 o'clock in the morning, but I'm not gonna do that. I'm kind of like Heather. I go line by line, and as most of you know, I do get in and play with the numbers, and there's some numbers in there that I do have some questions about, not necessarily that they're wrong or what have you, but I want to feel satisfied that I'm making the correct decision and those numbers have been justified for me.
I understand. I just don't know if there's a lot to be gained by delaying this, or really it's out there. We've noticed it. There didn't seem to be too much interest in this. So I'm wondering if we should just go ahead, or
I don't know if it's been noticed or not. Like I said, I talked to some of the big developers, the people that will be paying the money, some highly recognized business people in town, and nobody was aware of it that I talked to.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I just want to make sure if there are any ex parte communications of conversations we've had outside of this meeting that influence your decisions tonight, that is something we should have in the record. If I see no other discussion, we have a motion on the floor. I will ask for a roll call, please.
Before I take the roll call,
yes.
Could I just ask for a clarification? Staff's recommendation, plus that the council will review annually, and then there was a mention of strategic planning, but I didn't remember that you said that in the motion. Were you agreeing to that?
I believe the city attorney restated the motion in a form that was what Ms. Moreno agreed to. Would you like to restate that, Mr. City Attorney?
If I can remember that far back.
You're like me and Bob. Great.
Right. I believe that I heard Councilmember Moreno say that it would be reviewed at strategic planning.
You can say we'll review it annually, and that gives us the option to say it's at strategic planning. It's a meeting. Like, give us the flexibility of when that is, but it would be reviewed annually for...
That would also be fine.
Let's say that, and it gives us flexibility.
Thank you.
Does the second approve the modification?
Yes, I do.
Is that clear to the city clerk?
That's perfect. Thank you.
Proceed.
Roll call is Councilmember Moreno.
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
No.
Councilmember Kelly?
No.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
3-2, motion passes.
Thank you. Well, that takes us to management reports, which there are none. And then we move on to council announcements and reports. So first, announcements or items before we get to community reports, then we'll get to committee reports. So let me just go from my left to my right. Any council announcements or activities besides the committee reports?
No reports.
Well, I'll just take one of the many that we all shared this last week.
I'll just take
Cycle de Mayo. That was excellent. All the kids out there, getting the bikes inspected and riding around the lake. I was amazed at your granddaughter, that little, I mean, she's so small, she was all around that lake and had all kinds of energy, and just the kids were so cute, and it was just a great day. The mariachi band was awesome. So thank you very much for all your hard work in organizing that, and thank you to everyone that made it such a wonderful day. It was just excellent.
Yes, Cycle de Mayo was part of our Bike Month events countywide, and it was what our city has done. And we did it Cycle de Mayo to combine, of course, a bicycle event with Cinco de Mayo, and had many partners that shared the workload. The Latino Outreach Council certainly helped, and we had some great sponsors. So it was a fun time had by all. I have no other announcements. Nope. Well, let's cycle back through, and we'll just go through committee reports. And why don't we just start with Ms. Moreno and work our way this way and catch any of your committee reports if you want to make any.
No reports other than our finance committee will be meeting a week from this Friday. It'll be our first meeting, the 23rd, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have a report regarding LAFCO and the formation of a possible groundwater basin maintenance district. This legislation that would form the district is before the legislature. It was actually passed in committee, and now is going to be heard by the assembly very soon to decide whether there can be a hybrid governing body to determine groundwater maintenance throughout the North County. It's going to be a big deal, and we'll hear more about it. I'll keep you updated. But the concern that I have and several other LAFCO commissioners have voiced is that the Local Agency Formation Commission is supposed to take a petition and approve or deny the district, and then it goes to the state legislature, and they can do whatever they want with it and change it. And this is a little bit of an uncomfortable place to be. So I will keep you posted on what I hear. I'm not very happy with what the state does often, so I'm not feeling too optimistic, I must say.
Thank you. Well, the next mayor's roundtable, which is all the mayors in the county getting together once a month and considering topics that affect all of us, will be meeting in Morro Bay, and we'll be talking about water, if you can imagine. And, you know, quite frankly, most cities, in fact, I could say every city in our county is worse off than we are. We have a very well managed water company, which I'm very thankful for, and that has certainly helped us. But we do want to be aware of what's going on around us. Speaking of which, previously at the mayor's meetings, we have discussed fracking, which was a topic brought to our attention by a member of the public. And most mayors are taking the sense of let's wait and see, because there's a lot of things going on at the state level, and it's not something that really is occurring within our county and not likely to. There are some real concerns to be aware of. I don't think we are being very cautious as a council of directing staff to research items, and I think I'm comfortable in Let's see where this goes. It could well be a county-level decision. It's really more of a state-level decision. And I think I would recommend we conserve our staff resources at this time. And as this is discussed periodically, I'll bring it back if it looks like something that might affect us. If anyone, of course, council member, want to bring this forward for a discussion item, we could do that at any time. Integrated Waste Management Authority will have its board meeting coming up here, and we'll have election of officers. Currently, I serve as president. Adam Hill is vice president. And we continue to focus on issues around food waste recycling and issues with landfills, trying to reduce, extend the life of landfills is probably the topic. We have a continuous Council of Governments focusing on state funding, Well, there's not enough money, not much to say there. Regional Transportation Authority has met, and we did partner with the basically the organization Bob works with that deals with the homeless issues. We are partnering with them on a piece of property where it'll be a new site for a regional transit center. And I'm always supportive of buying property when property is low and when the owner is willing to sell the property at about $1 million below appraisal because they would like some tax benefits, and we can get a partner that'll pay the upfront costs and actually reduce ongoing costs in the future. Sound like a good business decision, so I think that was something we as a board supported. Just mentioning another committee that I sit on as mayor is called the City Selection Committee. It's really tasked by the governor to review a few items of countywide significance. It's fairly rare that we have a lot of work to do, as you know, that have sat on this, but it's very important this year that we are going to be interviewing folks for the airport board, which is a regional board, and that board, like so many of our regional boards, has got a close balance with the major differences of opinion, and so I think it's going to be a very important decision as we consider candidates for that board. It could well change the views of how the airport interacts with its neighborhoods and what they consider their zones, allowing for possibly more development of housing or business, depending on how you define how much area around the airport you need to reserve. So
is that applicants from the county?
Yes, it's countywide.
Can you let us know when those applications will be available?
They are available. In fact, I'll ask our city clerk if anyone is interested, that you could certainly call the County Board of Supervisors secretary and get an application. It's still possible to submit them. There are a number of applicants already, including two members that are incumbents that will be reapplying. And I think also we have the application at the city manager's office. So if anyone in our community is interested, we could make that available if you call our city office.
Yes, I have the key.
You got the key.
if you could get me one, I'd appreciate it.
Throw your hat in the ring. It's certainly a topic that Economic Vitality Corporation has weighed in on. They certainly have thoughts they've shared on this. In previous mayor meetings, we've actually had folks from the airport come and speak on this topic, and so it's going to be an important issue we will address. Mr. Sturdivant.
Yes, City Schools and Finance Committee are both on the 23rd, so we have that City Schools coming up, Tom, and then we have the Finance both on the same day, so that's coming up in another week or so, and we had a great turnout for Atascadero for the Buellton League of California Cities division dinner. We had the mayor was there. We had Councilmember Moreno. We had Marcia Torgerson and her husband, and Mike was here, and Peggy was able to make it. My wife Karen was able to make it. Great turnout.
And did you go too?
I'm sorry?
You went too?
Oh, I went there. Yes, I was there too. Yes. And it was very interesting because Lieutenant General John W. Raymond from the U.S. Air Force, he actually heads up the space garbage program at Vandenberg Air Force Base. So it was very, very interesting to learn about space trash and how that impacts the Earth and what they do to keep us safe. So very, very interesting. But it was well attended, had a great great turnout, learned some good things. And the very, very interesting thing I wanted to share was we were staying at a hotel in Buellton, and I walked down and picked this up. It's called Menus, the Restaurant and Wine Guide to the Central Coast. And what is on the front cover? Slo County's best-kept secret, the Guesthouse Grill in Atascadero, combines a relaxing atmosphere with fresh and local dishes. This was on the menu of the right there in the hotel in Buellton. So one of our local restaurants is making word, is getting spread. So good job, guys.
Very good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Councilman Kelly.
Well, as Huntley and Brinkley would say, good night, Tom.
Well, very good. No report from Councilman Kelly, but we do have individual determinations, and I do think we wanted to hear from Commander Allen, maybe a little update on Lighthouse, if that would be possible.
Well, as far as Lighthouse, the most recent upcoming event is going to be the Lighthouse 10K, 5K run. It'll be the 31st of this month. It's out at Pomar Winery. They're sponsoring it again for us. All the proceeds will go to Lighthouse. If anybody's interested, sign up on active.com. The race starts at 8 a.m. The runners all are provided a meal after the run. They have the 10K, 5K, and I think a half-mile walk or run for the little ones. So we're inviting everybody in the public if they're interested in that. The counseling program seems to be a very big success right now. There's several kids that are really engaged. They've actually got the Lighthouse Coffee Company up and running. And so if you're not familiar with what that is, we have created a company within Del Rio High School for the Lighthouse kids to learn job and life skills and responsibilities. We expect it to continue. The funny thing is about the company, they have layoffs and rehire again every time there's a new school year. So it's very dynamic. And so it's not as sustainable as one would think, but we keep on going with the same motive every year that we're going to teach these kids some good life skills and give them something positive in their future where they might not have had that otherwise.
Forget your hats. Thank you, Commander. And any other staff individual determinations? Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.